Just this past March, a team of environmental activists made a 1,400-mile dog sled journey across Ellesmere Island of the Canadian Arctic. The team leader was Will Steger, a veteran polar explorer and a recent winner of the Lowell Thomas Award for his work on climate change. And with him were six companions, including Sam Branson, a 22-year-old musician, and, in Mr. Steger's words, an emerging leader. The expedition aimed to educate the public on the effects of climate change and global warming, and it is with great pleasure that I welcome Mr. Steger and Mr. Branson to the show today. Hello.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Well, you've done other expeditions of this type in the past. Are they all pretty much the same?
Well, I've been traveling in the Arctic polar regions for about 45 years, and I've traveled first by kayak when I was a teenager, but the last 30 years I've traveled by dog team, and the last 20 years I've seen a lot of the major changes. And since the polar regions are so isolated, very few people have really been an eyewitness to the changes in global warming that the scientists have predicted. So,
why Ellesmere Island?
Ellesmere, for one, is where the last of the ice shelves in the northern hemisphere are, and these are now starting to break up, disintegrate because of global warming. We wanted to visit one of the ice shelves called the Isles Ice Shelf that had already broken up 2 years ago, about the size of Manhattan, and drifted down about 300 miles, and we visited that area. But then in addition to that, we communicated via the Internet. We were an Internet-based expedition, and our concentration was really on Sam's generation, the younger generation from 18 up to the upper 20s.
But what happens when an ice shelf migrates 100 miles? It must be melting along the way, but does it remain relatively intact?
Well, it actually breaks up. It's so thick that, and the season is really, the melting season is relatively short, 3-4 months maybe, 3 months at the most above zero. So they have a tendency of disintegrating. And this area is not much of a problem with navigation. I mean, if this thing was in a navigational lane, it would be a major problem, much bigger. I mean, icebergs are small chunks. These are very large, so they don't pose the breaking up process in that area, at least any hazard to humans.
Sam, what made you decide to join the team?
Well, I got the opportunity to join Will on his Baffin Island expedition last year for 3 weeks and got inspired by the landscape and the Inuit people and learned a bit about global warming while I was out there. And Will invited me to join this trip as I was in the demographic of the target audience he was trying to reach, and I jumped at the opportunity to be on the expedition and see the effects that global warming is having and spend some time in the Arctic.
Why do you think it's necessary to have somebody in the demographic on the trip to convince young people that there's a problem?
Because then they can relate. You know, you hear someone of your age group who's into the same things as you, and you can relate to that person probably easier than someone who you may feel isn't, experiencing the same stuff you are.
Did the expedition turn out the way you'd imagined?
It did. It was a culture shock at first, but I absolutely enjoyed every second. It was tough, but enjoyable and great to see the Arctic in all its glory.
Did you have to learn to drive a dog sled?
I did, pretty quickly. We had Will's a very experienced dog sled driver, and then we had Sarah and Eric McLair-Landry who do drive dogs, so I picked up with them pretty quick.
And how many huskies altogether?
There was 30 huskies, 10 per team.
And did they all survive?
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. The dogs are very healthy, yeah. They were very, very strong at the end of the trip.
Well, they're trained for surviving in this environment, aren't they?
These are called the Canadian Eskimo dogs, and their ideal temperature is 30, 40 below zero because they have such a thick fur. And their fur enables them to sleep on ice without any problem at all. And when it gets above zero Fahrenheit, they have a tendency of overheating, which is the biggest problem.
And how cold does it get generally?
Well, we start in right at the end of the wintertime, and we were seeing right around 40 below, and wind chills down to about 60 below. And then that warmed up. We just came back 4 days ago. It was above freezing in 24-hour light. So we saw quite a change. The first 40 days were pretty harsh conditions, and then when the sun came back, it warmed up pretty fast.
But it has to stay above freezing for the ice cap to remain intact, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. What happened there this year again was we had the spring came about 3 weeks early, and the area of land that we traveled around was covered by a thin layer of snow. That's actually a kind of a desert there, under 12 inches of precipitation a year. So when the sun comes back early like this, it all melts off. Within a week, about 70% of it's gone in some areas. And so at the 3 week earlier spring, that means that whole area is gaining that much more energy, heat balance energy.
Well, what is the effect of the kind of cold that you experience initially on someone who isn't used to living in that kind of situation, Sam?
We had amazing equipment and good sponsorship gear. So I think once
Are you totally covered?
You are totally covered, especially when it's windy, your whole face, skin's exposed. First day I went out on a dog drive before we started training, and I didn't wear enough clothes. And it's amazing having that feeling of your body shutting down. And when you are cold, all you can think about is being cold. It saps all your energy and positivity, which is a big wake-up call for me on the first day. And then the next day I went out with a lot more layers. And it's, as long as you're warm, you're fine, and you can get on with the task at hand.
Is this sort of adventure in your genes? Your father's also been in situations of extreme cold, but of a very different sort. In balloons and things like that.
He's been on some adventures, maybe things that I wouldn't do myself, but I definitely got the bug for being outdoors and adventure, and it's an exhilarating feeling.
Is there ever a danger of frostbite, Will?
Yeah, there is, actually, especially at the beginning. I mean, we were looking at wind chills 60, 70 below zero. Some areas when you're exposed, flesh will freeze real quickly. But again, it's through experience, through the proper dress, proper diet, you can avoid that. You can actually, once you get adapted to it, you really flourish. It's quite easy living in these conditions.
You also run across polar bears and other animals. How did the dogs deal with that?
Well, we had
I know I would run.
Nowhere to run. In the area we were in, that was the most concentrated I've ever seen of polar bears. We had six bears encounters that actually came in on us. We saw more than that in the distance. But we're staked out, the 30 dogs. They're staked out in a square, with almost like the wagon wheel of the Wild West, and with our tents in the middle of the square. So the dogs give us the early warning. There's several of the dogs that are attuned to the bears and will bark if something's coming in. So they give us the warning.
And the barking will keep the bears at bay?
Somewhat, but it alerts us at least. And then when the couple bears that came in, we use these called bear scares of a device. It's like a fireworks flare that explodes at the end, and that explosion kind of scares them away without hurting them.
Although many people today are talking about polar bears as an endangered species. Would that have been reflected in your experiences here?
Not in this section of the Arctic. The bear population, about 20% of that habitat is now being affected with global warming. Southern Hudson Bay, northern Alaska, and Spitsbergen. Our area, the population was still fairly healthy. But with global warming and the predictions, we're going to lose a lot of that sea ice in the summertime. And that population in our area, probably within 20 years, will start diving.
My guests are Will Steger and Sam Branson. We're talking about a global warming expedition to Ellesmere Island in the Arctic Circle. What, beyond just going along, Sam, what were you really looking for here? Were there specific kinds of data that you were recording?
Personally, it was the experience of being on an expedition and being able to see the Arctic. I think it's a very, very rare experience for people to get up there and especially spend so much time on the land. I was hoping to have some solid evidence and confidence in things that we saw, and the Ars Ice Shelf was definitely a big stop-off point for us. We spent, I think, 25 days getting there, and it was a rewarding feeling. And it's when you see that firsthand, this huge chunk of ice the size of Manhattan, you really realize how much ice is coming down off the ice shelves, and when it melts, it's going to cause big effect back home.
So is that the main goal of this expedition, to be witnesses to that sort of thing, Will?
Yes, it was for us, us as witnesses, but the main goal was really through the internet. We had a huge following. It was to inspire other people, bring the front lines of global warming to the average person, especially the youth. But then also through our websites and other activities that we've been, is to draw this generation into action, taking actually real action on global warming rather than just reading about it.
Well, what can we do? It sounds to me like we've gone past the tipping point.
Well, not really. I mean, the solutions are there. I mean, we have renewable energies, all the technologies, energy conservation. We have an energy crisis right now, and we're starting to see that in our inflation and the cost of fuel and shipping. But we need to turn that around. And
what do you mean? We already have switched to fluorescent bags, and many of us no longer take plastic bags when we go to the grocery store. But
This is just the start. I mean, our carbon dioxide emissions are skyrocketing, and not only in the United States, which is one of the biggest polluters in CO2, but all around the world. But there's a lot we can do in our own personal habits, but by empowering ourselves. I mean, and that's why we're working with the younger generations, because they are really taking this issue very seriously. by engaging not only politically but locally in your schools and workplaces and congregations and so forth.
Do you feel frustrated politically? There have been reports of the squelching of government reports by scientists regarding climate change. Has your work been affected by the attitudes of the people in the current administration?
Yes, this has been going on for over, since I've been working on it, over 20 years, and it's not just the current
administration. So it's not the Bush administration, it's everyone who really sees this as a kind of, well, if we really make an effort, as Jimmy Carter asked us to do many years ago, it's just going to be too expensive and too much sacrifice.
Well, the expensive part of that, I always debated that, because it's the best thing for economy to get in these technologies, and we're suffering right now because we didn't go in that direction. We went on the wrong road. But yes, there has been a concerted effort to confuse the public the last 20 years by certain institutions and so forth. But if we look at the last year and a half, the awareness of global warming, we can actually talk about it now. On a lot of radio stations, we couldn't even talk about it without a huge argument. And politically, it's at least towards the front stage there. The youth are taking this on, I think, is their major issue. We've gone a long ways in a year and a half, but this is extremely serious. I've seen it, and we used to say we had 10 years. We have less than 10 years. The amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, we're in a danger level, and we have to bring that level down real quickly, or else we're going to see the sea level start rising.
Well, there are world leaders. The president of the Czech Republic says there's no such thing, that this is all just a hoax. But what is the situation in England, Sam? Is the government doing something about global warming?
They're definitely starting to be, and the congestion charges partly to do with emissions, CO2 emissions from cars.
Ken Livingstone was just voted out of office.
He was, and Boris Johnson's in. But I've been a bit out of touch on that for the last few months.
Do you think that he'll keep the that charge in place because it's been a success?
The congestion charge, I'm not too sure, but I think that he, as Will said, we as a younger generation have to have a voice and put pressure on politicians to be doing more for the effort of global warming. And I think having someone new in office like Boris Johnson will be open to listening to new things than someone who's been in office for a while. So hopefully if we collectively get a voice, then he'll listen and put things more in place to aid it.
There are people who are doing things like putting a tax on plastic bags or charging for plastic bags, things like that. They just seem to be like a spit in the ocean.
It's a start. I mean, by changing small habits, but it involves our personal habits, but it also involves government business. I think the market is moving towards, I see it as the solutions in market-driven. Carbon has to be part of this equation. I'm not sure carbon tax. I'm not a real tax type person, but we have to drive the economy more into energy conservation, low carbon, in other words. And once we do that, I think we'll see some really quick changes. But we're seeing it already, but it's not really fast enough. I read in the paper this morning the large SUVs are not going to be manufactured, at least really low. And this is because of $4 a gallon of gas, of course. But we do, America especially has a lot of catch-up to do here. But that's why I think the youth here is going to really lead this movement.
And what did the indigenous people of the Arctic Circle think about all of this? Do they have proposals?
Well, they are extremely affected by this because the weather has changed. There's less ice, less hunting. The migration patterns are changing. Everything's changing in their world.
Fish that used to be up there are no longer up there.
Yeah, I mean, it's changing. But they don't have a voice, unfortunately. We really need their voice, but we worked with the Inuit last year, the Eskimo people, and we traveled with them into their villages. But they basically said they're adaptable people. They'll adapt. If the sea level rises, they'll just move their villages, and the ice melts, they'll fish on boats. And they always usually turn the question around to us: what will you do when global warming affects your culture? And that's, I think, something, because we're so interdependent on everything else. Sea level rise, we can't be moving New York City upstate.
Sam, did you keep a log or take pictures of the expedition?
I did. I took photos the whole way through. I wrote a diary every day for about an hour and a half. But
Can people access that on the internet?
Not my diary. The diary, I'm going to try and piece together a book, which people will be able to access maybe by the end of the year. But we did daily dispatches, which was part of the educational program for the schools following and the people following on the internet. So each day, one of the team members would write a dispatch about the day, and then maybe a small educational part about that, something specific like the animals, the wildlife, environmental things, with photos. So we had schools following us each step of the way, but that's all in globalwarming101.com, the website, and so people can check out the video feeds.
Yeah. Well, you also have the Will Seeger Foundation, which is aimed at educating people about this.
Yes, so the Will Seeger Foundation is, you know, environmental educational. Our first project is the Global Warming Site project. So on the Global Warming 101 site, globalwarming101.com website, you can see about our foundation, and particularly about the expedition, all of our dispatches, all the videos. We have a lot of action stories from young people and adults that are doing various things around the environment. So if you want to get ideas on how some of the things that you could do or some of the people and things you can connect with, that site is a real good resource.
Why do you think there are still some people who say this is all just a fabrication? We have Jim Imhoff in our Congress who says it's a hoax.
Yes, that's
the greatest
true.
Hoax being perpetrated on the American people, he said.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of confusion. I mean, first of all, science is hard for a lot of the average person to understand, but we've had a concerted effort here to confuse people and to get out of that cloud of confusion. And
is that penny wise and pound foolish? In the end, you know, like, well, it's going to be very expensive today, so let's not do it. And then,
well, that was the story that they used to infiltrate on us, that it was the worst thing for economy. We of course found that to be the opposite. It's the best thing for economy to get going and get jobs back into America, and our money's going abroad now with its high fuel prices. I mean, that's was part of the confusion out there. But I would say the youth are, I talk to thousands and thousands of young people and college age students, and there's very little argument out there, and that's why we need this movement that was. Obama is tapping into that energy. I mean, it's not Obama, but it's that energy, youth energy out there, the youth that are connecting, getting engaged more than just on computers. This is what's represented here in the global warming movement.
Well, are you hopeful that any one of the candidates will be an improvement, or do you think that there are some who are better than others feel?
Yeah, they'll definitely be. I don't know how we could slide any more environmentally than we have in the last 8 years. And McCain is very good on the environment also. But we need, you know, more than greenwashing. We need serious steps. We don't have 4 more years or 8 more years here to fumble around with global warming. We really need a leader that's going to take action globally also on this issue.
Sam, you plan any more expeditions?
I have none planned as yet, but I've definitely got the bug. I'd like to do another one, yeah.
Meanwhile, there is a book coming somewhere down the line.
Hopefully. We'll see.
And I want to thank you so much, both of you, for being with us. I've been talking with Will Seeger, who has been a polar explorer for how many years?
45 now.
Recent winner of the Lowell Thomas Award for his work on climate change. And Sam Branson, who is a musician when he's not going...
As a hobby, yeah.
But now... some being called an emerging leader in this whole fight to combat global warming. I want to thank the both of you so much for being with us today to talk about your experiences in Ellesmere Island.
Thank you very much for the
interview. Thank you very much for having us.